Blog Talk Radio. Hello, everyone out there. It looks like I forgot to start up the intro today, and so let's do it.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care, working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Sunday through Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Who's Reading the Organon, a show co-hosted by Vera Resnick and Debbie Bruck. We're challenging you to join us on our journey to complete Samuel Hahnemann's Organon in 1 year. Let's go.
Hi, I'm Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, talking with classical homeopath Vera Resnick. Today is August 1st, 2010, and you're listening to show number 61 of Who's Reading the Organon? We will be reading aphorism number 27, and if time, move on to aphorism number 28. While we're waiting for Vera to get on the line, we're going to start up with our inspirational quotes. And I have one that comes from the Talmud. Someone had posted it on their Facebook page, and I thought, I love this. And it says, the way a person wishes to go is the way he will be led. And so if a person really wants to do something, for good or for bad, all the elements of the world surrounding him will help him to go in that direction. The universe will conspire to help him or her achieve their burning desire. So it's like we really make it happen in the world. Get in touch with where you want to be and what you want to do in this world. Another quote that I got from Chuck Bartuk of Facebook, he found his reward and blessing of this rewarding life by practicing principles that he's found in his favorite books. And one thing he says is, the more you give, the more you get. And I like that. It's all about sharing and giving wholeheartedly to each other. Hi, Vera.
Hi, Debbie. Hi, everyone.
Nice to have you today. I hope it's nice weather over there.
Oh, it's boiling. It's unbearably hot.
Oh, good.
I think
hope you haven't... I think
it's the equivalent of 100 and something. Here.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yes, it is a global heat wave. I wanted to welcome everybody onto HWC, the Homeopathy World Community, and I've noticed that a lot of more people are getting on board Twitter. There are two buttons on the front page of HWC enabling you to connect very easily. One is the tweet it button. You'll see a little blue birdie there, and if you click it, you will automatically post a short link to your Twitter page that says creating waves of awareness, homeopathy heals gently and safely. And if you would, please add my Twitter profile name at Debbie Bruck so that I find out that you have clicked the button. I also want to thank Dr. Nancy Malik. She is so sweet. She sends me DMs, which are direct messages, to let me know what is happening politically and in the science world of homeopathy. So today she sent me a message that to tell the UK people to exercise your right to choose homeopathy. And she uses lots of hashtags. She also says that the UK MP, Caroline Lucas, has signed an anti-BMA and pro-homeopathy early day motion number 284 with a link to that page. And if anybody out there is on Twitter and you have something you feel is important to be created awareness about homeopathy, send me a direct message and I will retweet it for you and get the word out to my over 9,000 followers, if anybody is listening. also on the network, Dr. Adil has written a fun discussion called Tips to Make Your Audience Listen. It's really a great discussion. One other thing for inspiration. You know, inspiration can be more than just our words. It can be images. And someone on Twitter, the painter Flynn, has retweeted Spade McCool, and he leads us to, with a link, to images from the Astronomy Photographer of the Year 2010. I will put that link on the blog for today. You will just see some inspirational images. Okay, we're going to move on to aphorism 27, unless we want to do any review to lead us up to it.
We can go straight into aphorism 27. We headed into interesting territory here. Again, because there's a shift that we need, I think, there's a shift that we need to make when we're studying the organon like this. And it's a shift that means that we say, right now, Hahnemann is our teacher. Not what we heard from our teacher who heard from their teacher who heard from. But right now, we are accepting Hahnemann as our teacher. And that will have even more importance when we get to aphorism 28. But let's start with 27. Mm-hmm. The curative power of medicines, therefore, depends on their symptoms, similar to the disease, but superior to it in strength, so that each individual case of disease is most surely, radically, rapidly, and permanently annihilated and removed only by a medicine capable of producing in the human system, in the most similar and complete manner, the totality of its symptoms, which at the same time are stronger than the disease. Did you pick up on what I picked up in this?
Are you talking about what's in the parentheses?
Absolutely.
Whoa, that is really a clincher. It sticks right out there because this evidence-based stuff and using cellular experiments and even, I hate to say it, plant experiments, which I think are quite valid. We can see so much with them. Because we're trying to apply today's regulations about what is scientific to this ancient system, which is really scientific, like the first science. Okay, so what do you have to say about what's in the parentheses?
Well, it's just very interesting because I've often wondered how it is that it's deemed scientific to translate a rat's experience to the experience of a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And where the justification is for any animal testing that's done, even in the name of science, of medical science and healing people, because how much information can we get from an animal that truly applies to a human being, and how much suffering do we need to put animals through, whether it's mice or whether it's sweet pussycats? The mice have rights too. I find myself becoming quite militant all of a sudden.
Oh, are you becoming a pet, one of those PETA people for pet rights?
Well, not there yet, but I wouldn't want a fur coat that much, I can say. Certainly
well,
not in this
Maggie.
Weather.
No. Yes, but I mean, what do you, you know, there's a lot going on with genetic testing, cellular testing, different things. And, you know, there are similarities to some animals that are to humans. For instance, pigs have are used very widely in replacing some of our human parts, and they seem to work fairly well with a lot of anti-rejection drugs and things like that. But we can learn a lot from animals, but they can't talk to us.
There are animals that are being bred for experimentation.
That's true.
There are mice and rats that are bred for this, and this is their life. Mm-hmm.
And think of all of those. Go ahead.
Well, when you think about it, apart from the Disney animals, animals are not the same as humans, especially if we think in terms of the situation and circumstance that Hahnemann tells us to look into. When we treat pets, we look at their situation and circumstance, but we don't always assume that their situation and circumstance that we can understand.
Question. Okay, say that again.
Okay. I think we have to ask ourselves a question also when we're treating pets. Does approving on a human being, the results of approving on a human being, how much reliability does that give us in treatment of pets? I mean, of treatment of animals. I know there are a lot of animal homeopaths out there, and I treat animals occasionally as well. So I use the principles, but then there's a certain philosophical question that comes up, approving on animals. Could that count for human beings or just for animals? Is it worthwhile doing provings on animals? They can't exactly volunteer for the job. Mm-hmm. But certainly it casts a questionable light on testing remedies on animals for understanding how to use them in humans. In homeopathy, it's obvious that we can't do that. How are we going to get the mind symptoms apart from anything else?
That's true. Won't be able to unless there's somebody who can translate. You know, there's these gadgets that you put on, radio gadgets that you can put on your animals, and they'll translate what they say into words, into human language.
I thought that was a joke on YouTube. Actually, I saw
it's
some clips like
true.
That.
It's true. They have them, and apes and monkeys are. They can do phenomenal things, but I just don't know. And many parrots, there's a lot you will hear being said about the relationship between a human being and their pet and how close they are and how you can learn about an illness of the pet owner by observing and watching the illnesses and behavior of their pet. On another note, they use a lot of Drosophila flies for testing too.
Yeah, and they breed them as well. They breed them for that purpose. And I remember the old pictures they used to have showing these dogs smoking cigarettes. It's horrendous.
Oh.
At least that's not done now. That was done, I think, 30, 40 years ago.
We're going to send a new one up into space to test them again. We did that years ago. So people have very weird ideas.
But here we have what Hahnemann is saying is completely logical. You want to find out how humans react to a potentially medicinal substance, try it out on humans. Mm-hmm. And there are all kinds of examples. I remember reading some lately, but I don't remember where I read them, about how there are certain poisons which animals are completely immune to, and no matter what their body weight. And human beings find very toxic, and vice versa. So there is something, we are different organisms, and to say that you're being scientific when you test something on an animal and then say, now we're ready to test it on a human being, seems a little odd to me. And Hahnemann is clear, we need to see what it's capable of producing in a human system. But shall we move on to 28?
Okay, I was going
to
say.
Sorry, what
things.
Did you want to say? Okay, carry on.
Part of the reasoning probably is because they are using toxic substances in these drugs, and to test them directly on humans would be inhumane to humans, and therefore let's test them on something that's not human first and see how it goes, and then make adjustments, and then when it's acceptable. With some side effects, then we'll give it to humans. And then the other point I was going to make is we do actually do human experiments, massive, massive human experiments by giving everyone, and it's right now they are pushing the new 2011 influenza vaccine, and they're telling everybody to get it now, early, before the influenza even rolls around. So that's a massive human experiment. We're all guinea pigs.
I hadn't heard of that one.
Oh, you haven't heard of that one?
No, no.
They just announced it in the news this week. How many, like 30 million doses of the new influenza virus, or vaccine rather, are ready to be mailed
Same
out.
Thing, huh?
And at your local Kmart, Walmart, pharmacy, wherever you are, it's amazing to me that you can just go in and get one anywhere without supervision. But this is the new world. So are we still on Aphorism 27?
Does that mean the new world is the vaccinated leading the vaccinated?
We are all guinea pigs. Well, we're not if we have a brain and we want to use it and say, no, I don't think so. You know, we're not going to be part of that experiment. So do we want to repeat anything else in here?
Let's do Aphorism 28. Because that raises, Aphorism 28 raises a nice big question. As this natural law of cure manifests itself in every pure experiment and every true observation in the world, the fact is consequently established. It matters little what may be the scientific explanation of how it takes place, and I do not attach much importance to the attempts made to explain it. But the following view seems to commend itself as the most probable one, as it is founded on premises derived from experience. And what Hahnemann is saying here is huge. He's saying, I don't care about the scientific explanation of how it takes place. Then he says, I'm going to give what I think is the most probable explanation. Now that puts a different light on the aphorisms following as well. The aphorisms following is what Hahnemann thinks is the case. But ultimately, he doesn't care one way or the other. He cares about what he sees as a result of pure experiment and every true observation in the world. As he has said elsewhere, I value experience more than I value my own intelligence.
Mm-hmm. So that's your favorite
quote,
isn't it? I'm sorry, repeat that one.
It's amongst my favorite quotes, but but I think that's very it throws all of these aphorisms into a different light. Hahnemann says, first of all, it's a natural law of cure. What does that mean? We see it over and over and over again. That the stronger similar artificial disease radically, rapidly, and permanently annihilates the natural disease. Okay, that's the law.
27. Mm-hmm. Okay.
We see it as repeating from 27, and it's building. He builds the whole organon, like one brick on top of the other. The logic is very sequential most of the time. And here he's warning us. He's saying the following things that I'm going to say are not necessarily the scientific explanation, but it seems the most probable one. Hahnemann, in a way, is inviting us to say, well, maybe something different is carrying on, but I really don't care one way or the other. It's experience. It's what we see.
Now, some people might quibble or something, say, what was the scientific establishment during his time, and what is it now? Has it changed at all? Is it the same? Do they have a different way of using the scientific method or applying it or what they're trying to search for?
What's interesting is
that, yes,
to respond to that, I find that whole period, like the from the 1600s till roughly the 1900s, taking it very broadly, but especially the time when Hahnemann lived, it was a time of gentlemen scientists. It was a time of people who didn't specialized, they had broad view, and they applied ideas to science from different disciplines. Things weren't quite as separated out and specialized as they are today. Now, specialization is a dual-edged sword, because on the one hand, when you specialize, it means that you can move further ahead in your pinpoint specialization. On the other hand, it means that you lose sight of broader input that could completely change the way you're looking at your object of study. So in Hahnemann's time, you could have the same person being being involved in physics and in chemistry and in philosophy and in like many other and writing poems on the side, many different directions, certain intellectual abilities that were much broader. Now
people from different disciplines were speaking to each other.
Yes, also.
Is that what you mean?
And
they were
so.
They
That's
were melding ideas and sharing.
But the disciplines, you could have one person who would be interested and involved in several disciplines, several directions. And that
mm-hmm.
you see less and less of today as people specialize more and more in one area.
I'm just wondering what it was about the scientific explanation of how it takes place that he was living in this environment that made him come to this conclusion that I'm using this natural law of my experience, and it doesn't matter what all of these he says it matters little of what the scientific explanation is. So
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to have to go back to my favorite quote, Debbie, because there's just nothing else to do.
What is that word you use? I'm leading you into it.
Yeah, that's right.
Segue. This is your segue. Yay!
Do we refuse to imitate any operation until the wonderful forces of nature on which the result is based are clearly brought out before our eyes and made comprehensible even to a child? Would it not be silly to refuse to strike sparks from the stone and flint because we cannot comprehend how so much combined caloric can be in these bodies, or how this can be drawn out by rubbing or striking, so that the particles of steel which are rubbed off by the stroke of hard stone are melted, and as glowing little balls cause the tinder to catch fire? Again, it would be just as silly if we should refuse to learn to write because we cannot comprehend how one man can communicate his thought to another through pen, ink, and paper. I'm skipping. Why then should we hesitate to conquer and heal the bitterest foes of the life of our fellow men, the chronic diseases, in the stated way, which punctually followed is the best possible method, because we do not see how these cures are effected? Now, the truth is, it's more logical to say, if we talk about the hidden interior of man as being something that's truly hidden, not something that just is inaccessible to the eye but visible to CT, if we say the interior of man is truly hidden, then there's no way we can really understand what's going on in there. There's no way we can reach an effective scientific explanation that's based on observation, that's evidence-based, because we can't observe if we accept that that is truly hidden. Even if we don't accept that the hidden interior of man is truly hidden, if we think that that part is accessible through tests, the question is whether we believe the dynamic that's going on is hidden or is visible. But ultimately, if we say, and I believe Hahnemann is saying, the hidden interior of man is part that, in his words, from his religious orientation, he said the Creator never intended us to meddle there, inside the hidden interior. It's not visible to us for a reason. So it doesn't really matter how the cure is taking place. What matters is that we know how to use the natural law of cure.
It's almost as if we've taken the path not taken. The path we took was a wrong direction in some ways. I mean, antibiotics has done wonders. It's saved millions and millions of lives over the years, but in the end, we haven't, we're making it much harder for ourselves in the same way that we should have been using solar power or alternative energy instead of going down the path of using petroleum-based. And It takes us back to the way we started the show. The way a person wishes to go is the way he will be led, and therefore what you see in front of you is where you're focusing, what you're looking at. And if scientists are looking at something that is under the microscope or in a place that is hidden, as you say, and they're trying to uncover it instead of looking at what is right before their eyes, we could be so much further along with our homeopathic selections, remedies, understanding, curative power, if we had spent more energy here in studying Hahnemann's words and principles, and universal truths, that our understanding ourselves so much better. Boy, we went on to a philosophical journey.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want
it's philosophical, but it's not. It's philosophical,
uh-huh.
but it's not. And I think also that we need to take into account two things. First of all, the antibiotics and what's happening in terms of the allopathic medicines that are being used. Ultimately, the medicines we use are our tools. And we are the ones who are supposed to be using the tools. And I think what has happened in the conventional world and what happens to some extent in the homeopathic world when we do too much therapeutic prescribing and not prescribing on based on understanding of the disease state in each individual, the tool becomes the master. So all of a sudden, mm-hmm. antibiotics have taken over. They are ruling the drug world, not mm-hmm. we are using them as a tool. And when I see people throwing arnica at all and sundry and lathering on the arnica cream as well and saying, I used arnica and it didn't help, there is some kind of echo of this tool becoming the master concept. I don't know, it's a little unformed as a thought, but I'll get there.
It's an imbalance. A little knowledge is a dangerous thing. So if somebody knows, oh, everybody tells me to use arnica for such and such, for anything that ails me, then I'll use it and realize it's not working. But there's a reason it's not working, and they don't know it because they only have a little bit of information, a little bit of knowledge, and not enough to really understand the basis behind utilization of these wonderful remedies.
And the bizarre thing is that with antibiotics, what's happened is that the bacteria have used the antibiotics to hitch a ride in their own evolutionary process.
Mm-hmm.
So the antibiotics
help
your point. Yeah, mm-hmm. but now the antibiotics are helping the bacteria evolve to a smarter situation.
Yes,
anyway.
We really do need to be careful. It's just a matter for us as Homeopathy World Community members to create this wave of awareness, to create this ripple effect of knowledge through telling people about the radio show, telling them to read specific articles that you think really are enlightening from our website. There's so much we can do to improve our world, and it's just a matter of us getting out and being active, like being on Twitter or whatever you do, on Facebook, wherever you are. Tell people what you can do with homeopathy if you continue to study. And we're just about out of time, so if we want to conclude today with something brilliant, I don't know, Vera, have you got something to say?
Not particularly brilliant, but I just think it's so interesting to dwell on this, on the way Hahnemann says very boldly, it matters little what may be the scientific explanation of how it takes place. And I think actually the word that I would leave people with, I see a lot of discussion about the organon and a lot of lengthy discussion in different places. And sometimes I think, well, how much do we need to discuss? Very often Hahnemann states his intent and his meaning very clearly. Nothing is hidden. And I feel that we need to catch ourselves when we start theorizing.
Mm-hmm.
Take a dose of sulfur or cannabis and move on.
that's for me. I'll take the cannabis. No, homeopathically, dear, but the thing about it is I have used this show in my conversations with people, learning especially what is a medicine. Thank you so, so much. See you next time.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Who's Reading the Organon with homeopaths Vera Resnick and Debbie Brooke on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio. Remember to take the Organon off the shelf and read it.